T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m.
And you're in a little bit of a tempo. We kind of had him on their heels. And his point was, hey, once we got him in their heels like that, let's keep them there and let's do some things. Now, the issue you run into, guys, is that when you're in the red zone like that, you have game plan plays that you scheme all week in the red zone to get into those situations. So that's kind of those ones I think where Nick and I learn, okay, if that's something that, you know, he's feeling, let's figure out a way to communicate, okay, to get in a situation. You know, let's talk through that so the next time that happens, we're on the same page. And that's all it was. None of it was, it wasn't him criticizing me or me criticizing him.
Well, you're the coach. It's your job to criticize. That's cool. That is Matt Nagy talking about the conversation that he had with Nick Foles after Nagy has decided that this offense, not good enough. And he agrees with me because I spent a lot of time talking about that it's time and they're out of excuses. And at 4-1, it's a good time to coach harder, given this opportunity they have a little bit extended time. Here to talk Bears and NFL with us is Robert Mays of The Athletic, and he is on Twitter at Robert Mays. He's on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Robert, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I think this is a unique opportunity for the Bears because I don't know how many of us had them sitting at 4-1 right now having made the quarterback change, because if you had told me they had made the switch, I was thinking more likely to be 1-4 than 4-1.
Absolutely. It's kind of a strange set of circumstances. I assume that if we saw Nick Foles this early in the year, it's because it would have been an out-and-out disaster with Mitchell Trubisky, and that's just not how it's been. And they have managed to stay afloat while also putting Nick Foles into the lineup, which is a set of circumstances I never could have anticipated coming into the year.
If you want to get a look at our guest, Robert Mays, you can by going to twitch.tv/670thescore.com. Is that a Minnesota North Stars hat?
Yeah, I have one type of 47-brand hat that fits my head, so I just buy them in all different styles because I'm very particular about it. So I was like, I liked the hat, and I was like, oh, good, that works.
That is a pull for me because I having trouble seeing the logo. The fact that I was worried I was going to guess wrong and it was going to be some obscure minor league baseball team or soccer team somewhere. When you hear Nagy say what he did about the details of the offense, do you think that was aimed at somebody? Do you think he's saying that to be heard by a player or players, or is he actually talking generally?
It feels like he's just kind of excited about getting to have those sorts of conversations, right? That's what I've kind of come to feel about their dialogue and even Nick Foles' dialogue with other players on the offense. If you think about what happened in Atlanta, where he can tell Anthony Miller, all right, just run to the L in this spot. That's what we want to do. When the play that he hit to Allen Robinson to kind of put the game away on Thursday, where you see him change the protection, you hear him say rub, rub to Robinson to kind of do that little wheel. Even that level of dialogue and conversation that's happening from between Foles and the rest of the offense, between Nagy and Foles, I'm assuming that he's just saying it because he's really looking forward to being able to tune the offense with that sort of specificity, because I would assume that those sorts of conversations on that granular level were not happening to this extent without Nick Foles being the quarterback.
Here's my worry, though, and this is from a large body of work that we've seen from Nick Foles, and it cuts both ways. And I guess my working theory right now is that nothing that Nick Foles does is predictive of the next thing he's going to do. He can have you know what I mean? Like, he can have a horrendous quarter. He can make the worst throw you've ever seen, but he doesn't care. He snaps right back. Everything always, it's like at the end of a South Park episode, even if Kenny is killed, it doesn't matter because the next episode, Kenny's back. And it's sort of everything with Nick Foles resets to that base level. He could throw like an absolute dart touchdown. He can go 6 of 6 on a drive, but he could still have something awful happen on the next drive. It may not be true, but that's just kind of my working theory to help me understand what I'm seeing.
I said this on Thursday. The roller coaster is real. It is a real thing, and we are on it right now, and it is going to be a hell of a ride. The biggest difference is you also have that with Mitchell Trubisky. The volatility would be the same with Trubisky, but with Foles, I think you have the mental side of it in a way that just didn't exist when Trubisky was the quarterback. So if I'm going to have just scattershot accuracy and things all over the place and not knowing where the ball is going to go at any moment, I'd rather take that with the mental side that Nick Foles seems to bring, where he's getting you out of bad places, getting you into the right protection. He can communicate stuff to guys in ways that wasn't communicated to them before. And this, I don't know how much better Nick Foles is than Mitchell Trubisky, but I know it's a little bit better. And at this point, if those are your two options, that's the option I want.
It also seems to put the coach in more of a comfortable spot in as a play caller and as a game planner. And I find Nagy to be a fascinating case study in the difference between a head coach and game planner play caller. Because I really respect Matt Nagy as a head coach, as a culture creator, as a tone setter. These guys, you can't win the games they've won in the way that they have if you're not caring, listening, paying attention, believing, frankly, that this is the way they've won these games. And yet, he does, and Nagy himself sometimes seems to get in his own way when it comes to solving that puzzle of the next play, rather than seeing the whole game laid out in front of him.
I feel like it's hard to call a game when you don't have confidence in the quarterback to throw the ball to the right person. And that may seem like an oversimplification, but when you, and this is how kind of those Kubiak-Shanahan offenses have worked for years, where you're just pointing the quarterback in the right direction. All I need is somebody that can throw the ball to the right guy to make sure that my game plan is set up the right way. And that, to me, would be the biggest difference between Trubisky and Foles, and that's kind of what I'm talking about with the mental gap. He may not throw it to the person, but he's throwing it in the direction of the right person. And that, as a quarterback, or as a play caller and a play designer, and overall just a game planner, gives you more confidence in what you're doing because he's like, all right, and even if the accuracy is a concern, I believe he's going to make the right decision. And that's why I'm excited to see if we can stack some of these games together and stack some of these games together against teams that aren't two of the best defenses in the NFL through the first half of the season. What does this offense look like and what does the plan look like with a quarterback that you have faith in executing that plan, even if he's not doing it at a high level, against some normal NFL defenses? These are all questions we haven't had answered yet. I still have faith that this offense can look better moving forward with the component pieces that are in place.
We always get back to the argument about balance and about the necessity of running the football and then seeing each game play out and say, well, should they have run it here? Or should they have run it there? Where would this balance we seek actually have come from? And when you're 4-1, it makes a lot of things look really good. And it makes a lot of these decisions look better in hindsight because of the record. But I watch other games and I wonder, is the idea of chasing run-pass balance the right way to look at it? Or do we just have to look at what befits them in any given situation and not worry about that ideal?
I have no interest in a run-pass balance. I have interest in first downs. However you're going to get those first downs, do it however matters. I think you should care about possessing the ball. But possessing the ball and controlling the game and all of those things have nothing to do with how often you're running the ball. It's about how often you're moving the chains and about how much time you're milking between plays, all of that stuff. I want a team that's making the right choices in the right scenario. And again, that may seem like an oversimplification, But that's all that matters. If you're finding the best way to get 10 yards every three downs, I don't care how often you do it. I think you have to run the ball for a couple different reasons. I think you should run the ball to create an aggressiveness and a mindset about your offensive line and keeping them comfortable. If you're running 60 dropback passes a game, it's a cool thing to do to your line. I think that running the ball and tying it to your passes is the way to make play action effective. I don't think establishing the run is necessary to have an effective play action game, but I do think you need a marriage between those two things. That is all I care about. And you have to do it often enough to help your line and give credence to play action passes. Having a 50-50 split or some magic number or any of that, I don't think is necessary whatsoever.
We're talking with Robert Mays on Sports Radio 670 The Score, writer for The Athletic, who is also part of our Twitch stream right now, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. James Daniels is a big loss for this offensive line, and I know people don't get excited about interior line play. It's not a sexy aspect of football, and nobody's drafted for your fantasy league, but this is a big deal. And Alex Bars was bad when they put him out there, and I'm not quite sure how they're going to address this, if they can find some veteran who's ready to step in. But what do you think is material about this absence and how they decide to fix it?
Daniels was one guy who could give you a sort of physicality on that offense in ways that other guys didn't. He was probably the best run blocker on the interior for the first few games of the season. He brings an attitude and an edge that I think they desperately needed, and now they might not have. So that's the question. Do you feel like you can bring in somebody off the street? The COVID protocols bring complications to that. It's 6 days now, I think, between when you can get in the building to when you can even play. So do you have to take that into consideration? I think that fewer teams are going to be adding veterans midseason this year as a result of that. So they may have to work with what they have. And James Daniels is far from a perfect player. He's having plenty of issues over his first couple years. Those issues, especially in pass protection, haven't gone away this year. But I do think that losing him is going to be a big thing for a team that is trying to find itself in the run game.
Watching Khalil Mack have finally a very satisfying Khalil Mack game was a reminder of his value above replacement player at what he does and just how he can do things that others can't. How do you put him in the best position to actually be able to do that more often, rather than just absorbing double teams or being the center of attention and functioning as a decoy for a team that's that worried about him? I love to watch him do things himself that are making the team win.
It's interesting because you see him compared to other pass rushers. Like when I was watching the Browns defense yesterday against the Colts again, Myles Garrett is playing inside a little bit. They're using him in some stunts. They haven't really done that often this year with Mack, and they're using him a lot just as a traditional outside linebacker, edge rusher, and most of the time, there are a lot of situations where teams understand how they can influence him with formation, so he'll be lining up for the tight end side a lot, and he'll be in that traditional wide nine spot outside the tight end, even in traditional passing situations. So stuff like that is interesting to me. I was asking a buddy about it who knows a lot more about run fits than I do. I was like, why is he out there on 3rd and 7? And I think it's because a lot of teams are trying to gash defenses with the run on 3rd down this year to take advantage of defenses that aren't going to actually be gaps down in those spots. So I've been thinking about that. It's like, all right, how can we put him in the best possible spot all the time without sacrificing the soundness of their defense? And I don't know what the best answer to that is. If the Bears had it, I assume they'd be using him in slightly different ways. I would like to see him on more inside stunts, and again, maybe lined up inside a little bit more often. But if you don't think that's the best way to use your personnel because your best backups on this team are interior linemen, I can also understand that. So I think it's definitely a balance.
That's interesting because to me, a lot of that comes down to your trust level in your interior linebacking, which has been at times a problem for the Bears this year, where Trevathan hasn't been his usual sudden and physical self. And Roquan Smith has had some real flashy plays, but also has stopped his feet in the hole. He's been susceptible to spin moves and to jump cuts in a way that someone of his athleticism shouldn't. And I would think that if you had, you might be able to screw around a little bit more with some of those upfront games if you really could trust the soundness of the next level.
That probably is true. And I think that if you look at what happened, that Brian Hill touchdown that the Falcons scored, where they, I think it was a third and medium, I want to say, and they ran just a traditional power run, and they scored a 35-yard loudish touchdown. And I'm sure that's in Chuck Pagano's head as he's sitting there thinking, what kind of games can we play on third down? Because, again, that's what a lot of offenses are doing. You saw it a couple times yesterday. I want to say somebody scored a long touchdown off of it. Again, it was third and five, and they're just gashing teams downhill because on third downs, often, teams are running those designer pressures where you're using games, you're having guys line up in weird kind of different ways. And if you're afraid of teams hitting you in the running game on those spots, you want to be more sound. And you're right. They don't have a lot of faith in that run defense right now because of the way those guys are playing behind them. So there's just a lot of stuff to take into consideration. And you think about, like you said, with replacement, what's the value over those guys? So if you move Mack inside and you take Bilal Nichols out and you move James Waters in as your third pass rusher, are you really better than if you're using Mack on the outside and Nichols on the inside? So those are all things I think they're trying to figure out right now as they think about the personnel.
And there's a lot of bodies out there. Like, we have seen pretty heavy rotations. And they're getting that reset when the Bears break the huddle on defense or line up. And you're like, okay, wow, okay, Brent Urban is in the game. And as you mentioned, James Waters, there's Barkevious Mingo. That they're getting guys in a lot. And for the defense to be relying on the number of people that they're using speaks pretty well to how they've selected and how Pagano's got them coached.
The best thing that this staff and front office have done in their time in Chicago is find and develop interior defensive linemen. I mean, when you think about all the guys that have been good for this team, whether it's Eddie Goldman, Bilal Nichols, Roy Robertson-Harris, Mario Edwards is giving them some juice up front this year. They've been and even Brent Urban has had some really nice splash plays, especially against the run so far this season. So that is one area of this team where they have depth, they have versatility. And again, I'm just curious about how Mack fits in there in terms of alignment. Because for the most part this season, we have seen him outside the tackle, rushing as an edge player, and that's how they've used him. So we'll figure that out. How does that work? The pass rush looking like it did last week, I think, is a sigh of relief for a lot of Bears fans when that unit had not really controlled games before. And to do it against an offensive line that had really been dominant over the first month of the season, had three guys that were playing kind of an all-pro level, that gave me a lot of relief as a Bears fan. I can say that.
What have you seen for the Panthers, the Bears' next opponent, that interests you as far as this upcoming matchup?
So I have not watched them a ton, and I actually, it was one of those teams, we do our podcast every week, and each week we do a team visit where I interview or talk, have a conversation with one of the Athletic team writers. And Joe Person, who I've known for a while, covers the Panthers. And I was sitting back today thinking, who do I want to talk about this week? And I even forgot the Bears were playing them. But I was like, oh, man, I want to see what the Panthers are doing. It seems like they have a really good sense of what they want to be offensively. You know, Bridgewater's playing at a reasonably high level. They've really implemented Robbie Anderson in a way that he's a weapon for them. I've always thought that he was a talented player who was probably misused with the Jets in the same way that everyone was being misused with the Jets. So I'll be curious to see what he can give them. And you know, Mike Davis has been solid for them. It seems like offensively, they're coordinated in a very fun way. You know, Joe Brady is somebody that everyone loved, you know, coming out of LSU when he was at LSU last year. I think it was a really smart hire by Matt Rhule to bring him in. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I think that is a team that I'm curious to watch more this week as I prepare.
Robert, appreciate it much. Always great stuff. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Of course. Anytime, guys. Talk to you soon.
That is Robert Mays from The Athletic. We are getting some breaking news here at Sports Radio 670 The Score. Breaking news on The Score is brought to you by Pennzoil. Motor oils made from natural gas. The proof is in the Pennzoil. According now to an official White Sox release, the Chicago White Sox and manager Rick Renteria have agreed to part ways following the 2020 season. White Sox GM Rick Hahn announced today. Rick Renteria fired. Wow. It's the right move. It is absolutely the right move by the Chicago White Sox, and we are going to get into this right damn now. 312-644-6767. I am pleased because, as I mentioned in fine detail and in long form in this space, you heard me talking about it, that someone is going to hire A.J. Hinch or someone's going to hire Alex Cora. There are really smart managers who are available. And the problems with the lineups, the problems with pitching decisions, it remained a headwind for the Chicago White Sox, but no more. So that is that. Wow. Ricky Renteria is out. We're going to be talking about it on The Score.
Thanks for keeping us the number one sports station in Chicago. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Two outs in the ninth inning and a two ball, two strike count. Hendricks trying to dig deep. Here's his 2-2. Mazzara takes strike three called. And a win a long time coming for the A's franchise. It has had so much regular season success and so little in the postseason. Bob Melvin and his team earned this one. What a win today and what a series win for the Oakland Athletics. And disappointment for the White Sox, who battled hard.
The final pitch of the White Sox 2020 season. A positive for them, a relatively successful season, but it ended somewhat ignominiously as we watched some very questionable managing down the stretch that we discussed in detail and at length. The use of Carlos Rodon, the use of certain lineups and certain players who aren't as good as other players. And we were questioning a lot of that all year, and talking about whether or not the managerial spot was standing in the way of future success. Apparently, Rick Hahn and the White Sox front office believe that indeed, yes, that was the case. Rick Renteria has been let go by the White Sox. The bottom of the hour brought to you by Golf Mill Ford, Illinois' largest Ford dealer. Beats every deal by at least $500. GolfMillFord.com. We are discussing the news of the day, and I didn't think it was going to happen quite like this. And I don't, it always puts me in an uncomfortable position, particularly for someone who is as well-liked and respected around the league as Ricky Renteria, who has now managed both Chicago teams and has now been weighed and measured and has been found wanting, because it's just, it hasn't been good enough. There are managers available right now, really successful, talented ones, who now are going to be in very real discussion. And I don't think the White Sox wanted to be late to this party, as they were going to try to put themselves in the conversation, perhaps, for some of these guys. The official release from the White Sox, there's some added information here. And the verbiage is interesting here, where they say they have agreed to part ways. Well, there's no really agreeing to part ways. That's he was fired. It's not like Ricky Renteria went to them and said, I'd like to not have a job anymore. It's the phrasing. I don't know why people can't say Rick Renteria let go by the Chicago White Sox. It's the last line here. The status of the coaching staff will be determined moving forward and in consultation with the team's next manager. That is the status of the coaching staff. And I wonder if now the other thing that we're talking about is sort of the other enormous question looming on this team is the future of Don Cooper, who's been here for 20 years, 17 years now, however long it's been, who has just been a fixture. And some feel that he's been kind of in semi-retirement for a little while now, that he's not quite the presence that he has been. This might be the right time. And it's not necessarily punitive, but it may just, as long as you are in the process of embracing novelty and embracing a new way of looking at everything, this might be the right time for that to make that a part of this larger scale movement to maximize all of the best years of your young and developing team. That's a heck of a thing that the White Sox have done. And that is, it's too bad for Ricky Renteria, but he was not a good manager. I don't think. I think they cured him of so many of his bunting problems. They made sure that he was shepherded along with understanding modern baseball. But sometimes enough is enough, and too much Edwin Encarnacion and too much Nicky Delmonico and too much Nomar Mazara, and always seemingly being reactive instead of active when it came to moving pitchers in and out of games. And an interesting note from the Scores web editor, Cody Westerland, on Twitter, who noticed the White Sox didn't even thank Rick Renteria in the press release announcing his exit or include a perfunctory quote. It's cold-blooded, and it's also winning time. Indeed, it is. Indeed, it is. That this is. And our guy Craig Calcaterra, who is going to join us tomorrow, he notes on Twitter, when the manager you consider to be the placeholder is still there, when your rebuild reaches the now we're contender stage and you want someone else, yeah, they do. And I do too. And I always preface some of these things when we did talk about this. And in the aftermath of the unfortunate playoff ouster, I always say I hate being that guy, and I hate saying that, you know, fire the manager. It's because it's too easy and it's like old fashioned dumb sports radio. But they needed a better manager. And now we'll get into these other questions regarding the future of Don Cooper and regarding what it's going to feel like to interview either one of these talented managers who have been tainted by the cheating scandal. And that's Alex Cora and that's AJ Hinch. Now, multiple things can be true here. AJ Hinch he was negligent in that cheating scandal, should have done more to put an end to it, obviously knew what was going on and abdicated his authority when he chose to not stop it. He's also a really good manager. It isn't one or the other. It's not binary. And I think the same goes for Alex Cora, that he also was involved and he was punished. He's also a really good manager. And I don't necessarily think that having been involved in that in my world is necessarily disqualifying, because I don't think it means that that person's going to come in and do those same things. It's not like hiring Greg Williams as your defensive coordinator and then being surprised that the other team is headhunting, that your defense is headhunting. There are certain things that are just in somebody's nature and it's what they do and it's who they are. I don't think that what they perpetrated is necessarily indicative of the nature of AJ Hinch as a manager. I just know that he understands the way modern front offices think about handling a baseball game and looking at some of this stuff. But this is a winning move. This is the kind of thing the White Sox, and maybe it's the Bulls effect. I don't know. Maybe this is just the ownership's understanding that get on with it. That if you're going to do this, there are times and places that they can do this. And it is also an investment in the players. And players liked Ricky Renteria. But the message that this sends, the message that it sends to the players of, we believe in you. We believe you are an actual contender that deserves a manager who will make decisions commensurate to a contender and not be a reason why they have a lesser chance to winning, and in fact be a reason why they're going to have an advantage going into every game. A lot of reaction is pouring in here. I'm looking forward to finding out what you think. You, the White Sox fan, 312-644-6767. Ricky Renteria is out. It could be the rest of the coaching staff could be out as well. That's going to depend on who they hire and what that person wants. But that is big news. When's the last time that both of the Jerry Reinsdorf-owned teams went into the same offseason looking for new managers and coaches? I hope that they can strike similarly as the Bulls did in landing perhaps the best available. Rudy says, holy smokes, I didn't see that coming, in email here. He said, I'm outside cleaning up the yard, and I ran into a chair when you said that. People say you shouldn't celebrate someone losing a job, but call me a bad guy, I'm celebrating. The White Sox got better today. It's proof that Rick Hahn sees what we see. It's unfortunate, but it's very, very promising. Now, go get Trevor Bauer and let's effing go. I think there will be a time and a place to have that discussion as well, and whether or not that's a guy that you want in your team dynamics here. But maybe that's what you would trust in a new man. Maybe if they're thinking about that, maybe somebody other than Ricky Renteria would be the guy to handle Trevor Bauer in your clubhouse as well, and some of the prickly relationships that he may have with teammates and opponents and others. But this is a unexpectedly newsy day, with the White Sox now looking for a new manager. And I have to say, I don't want to feel too good about it, because you're right, you're not supposed to, but if you're a kind of a Sox meatball here, this is what you want. You don't want them middling along, because you only get a certain number of bites at the apple here when you know your team is that it is another recognition that they think they're good, and they know they're good. And that's kind of cool too. This is Dave out on the road on the Score. Hello, Dave.
Hey, good morning, guys. Great show. I'm happy that I hope Renteria, good luck with the rest of life, stay healthy and everything. But it's time we need a manager who understands these guys, speaks Spanish and everything. Cora and the other guys, they're good too and everything. I think the only guy it's good for the job is Ozzie Guillen.
It's not going to be Ozzie Guillen. Dave, we appreciate the call. Thank you. I don't think it's about understanding the guys and speaking Spanish. That there was a time for that, maybe, when some of this was coming together. But this is about tactics and understanding pitching and in-game decisions, lineup construction, etc. This is about the baseball now. This isn't about the soft stuff anymore. Ricky was okay for some of that and maybe served that purpose, sort of shepherding them along to this point. But I disagree. I think it is about completely other things now than it is. The culture's there. They've set their own culture now. They've got their leadership. They've got guys who are ready to win and want to win. And I think the right investment in these young kids isn't coddling them with some warm avuncular figure. I think what matters now is somebody that is going to make sure they put everybody in the best possible position to succeed. We're going to find out what Steve Stone thinks next on The Score.
Breaking White Sox news on The Score. Powered by Radio.com Sports. The Sox fire manager Ricky Renteria. Keep listening for all the details of this huge story on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Breaking news on The Score is powered by Radio.com Sports. And brought to you by Indeed. Find the high impact hire your business needs at Indeed.com/high impact. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. Steve Stone, White Sox TV analyst.
We've got NASA on one screen. I've got an iPad and four different screens. I don't even know where to look for the screen.
Steve's looking at weather patterns in Brunei.
This is lots of screens.
Former Cy Young Award winner.
On the mound, it is Steve Stone. He's working a little faster. He's got the curveball, throwing it more for strikes.
When you say he's changed his style, originally he was a fastballer.
Oh, he was a hard thrower.
Learned how to pitch.
Breaking down the game of baseball for more than 3.5 decades.
The great thing about this game is the understanding can be rudimentary, whether you're a first-timer, whether you've seen most every game every year for a long time. It doesn't really matter. There's something in this game for everyone.
On Twitter, at Steve Stone.
If you're listening to this on Mitch Rosen 670 The Score and all of the wondrous folks who have come through those halls, if you have a friend who has a Twitter account, call that friend and ask them for just $1.99 a month. If they'll follow Steve Stone, you can make one Steve Stone terribly happy with one follower or two followers.
Steve Stone with Dan Bernstein on 670 The Score. The Score.
Major White Sox news today. If you're just joining us, the White Sox have let go Ricky Renteria, and they also have said that other decisions regarding the rest of the coaching staff are going to depend on their next manager. So the managerial search begins now. Here to talk about it is the White Sox TV analyst on NBC Sports Chicago, Steve Stone, who's on Twitter at Steve Stone, joins us in the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Hello, Stoney.
Hello, Dan.
we talked about it, and we discussed some issues with the managerial position with the Chicago White Sox, questioned some decisions. Even all that said, I did not see this coming quite this swiftly. Did you?
Yes, I did. And the only reason why I say that is, look, I don't want to diminish anything that Ricky did in his years that he was there. The 3 years previous to this, he had himself a bad ball club, not ready to win. The youngsters weren't ready yet. The free agents weren't acquired. The minor league hadn't developed quite as quickly as they wanted, but they understood that because Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams both said, five-year rebuild. It was going to be a five-year rebuild. So what I said coming into this year was I liked what Ricky had done so far. I said, but we're going to learn a whole lot about Ricky Renteria this season. And the reason is, for the first time in 4 years, 1 year with the Cubs where he had a bad team, 3 years with the White Sox where he had a bad team, we're going to finally find out a lot about Ricky this year because he doesn't have a bad team any longer. Ricky has a lot of talent. He doesn't have a team that's complete yet, but he has a lot of talent with this team, and I wanted to see how he handled the talent, specifically the pitching staff, specifically rundowns, specifically execution, things to do when you're not hitting the ball out of the ballpark. And I know the success of the Sox when they hit the ball out of the park, but in order to be a good winning ball club on a daily basis, you have to be able to win those games where you're not hitting home runs. And I think we're seeing a roadmap of how to do things when you watch Tampa Bay on a daily basis. Watch the Tampa Bay team. They can win close games. They can do the things they have to do when they're not hitting the ball out of the ballpark consistently. And I think it's real interesting to watch that team in relation to this era of baseball, because I think things are going to swing back a bit. I don't think it's going to be consistently slugball. One of the things that that I found from Ricky this year was he had very little, if any, feel for pitching at all. He thought it was interchangeable. You could put a reliever in a ball game in a critical situation, and that reliever for 5 years was a starting pitcher. Had no idea how to be a relief pitcher. And I think Dallas Keuchel said it exactly the way I would have said it, but Dallas has obviously the bona fides to be able to do that. He said, hey, look, we're starting pitchers for a reason, and those guys are relievers for a reason. And I think Ricky felt they were interchangeable. I didn't really feel that that they were. So, you know, I look at some of the rundown situations, Dan, and at times it almost looked like a Chinese fire drill in that everybody was running around and everybody was throwing the ball to various places. Sometimes they were taking 5-6 throws in a rundown, which needed one or two at the most. I think that's a sign of managerial overviews. There were certain things that you looked at and you said, you know what, this has got to change. And the reason I say that is I don't believe that the White Sox will be 6, 7, 8 games better than Minnesota next year. I think they have a chance to be better, but not 7 or 8 games. And I think if you bring in a manager that pays more attention to detail, has a really good idea about how to use his pitching staff, I think this team can beat Minnesota next year. I just didn't think this team could beat Minnesota with Ricky Renteria at the helm.
Do you think that the accelerated timing of this may be due to a candidate or candidates' availability for interview, that they wanted to get out ahead of this to make sure they didn't miss out on some of the best available?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, you know, we're before the World Series. I don't think they want any statements. I don't think baseball wants any statements during the World Series. I don't think they mind them necessarily at this point. But I don't think they want to make any definitive moves. And I think the White Sox will look out there. They'll pick the guy that they want. And at this point, at least, it appears to me that the real good candidates for these jobs have not been scooped up yet. They're all in interviewing process. Teams have mentioned, you know, we're going to take a look at this, we're going to take a look at that, regardless of what it is, whether it's general managers being let go, like Billy Epler from the Angels, whether it's managers being let go or vacancies in the managerial spot. I think everybody is right now in the let's see what's out there phase and let's see who we want to interview. And I believe, yes, exactly. That's exactly right, Dan. They know that time is of the essence. They don't want to identify a guy that they're particularly interested in and then see him go to somebody else, like, say, in the division.
I brought up the names A.J. Hinch and Alex Cora. I have immense respect for A.J. Hinch, despite what happened in Houston. And I said the following. I said two things can be true. A.J. Hinch was at fault for allowing the Astros to do what they did on his watch. He was negligent in his authority. He's also a really smart and talented manager. I think both of those things can be true. How would you weigh his wrongdoing with a potential candidacy?
Well, look, let me use two guys in that statement, because I think it holds true for both. One is Alex Cora and the other is A.J. Hinch. They both got in trouble. They both paid a price for it. I'm of a different mind than most people in that I think that if you make one mistake, you shouldn't lose your career over it. And I look at the body of work. I've talked with both men extensively. I've talked with A.J. Hinch a bit more than I've talked with Alex Cora, but both men really understand how to play the game, and both men are very good managers, and both men have become leaders of men. I talked with A.J. Hinch about his early stint with the Diamondbacks, and he readily admitted that at 34 years old, coming out of the front office, he had no idea what to do as far as being a manager and a leader of men. He said he understood the game of baseball. He didn't understand the game of people. He couldn't deal with people well enough at that point. So he did some things and changed. When he went to Houston, he became a very good manager. You're right. He is very smart. I think Alex Cora also has a high baseball acumen. I think as an infielder, he has a pretty good idea about how things work. I think A.J. as a catcher, I think A.J. understands a bit more about the total overall game because, you know, when you look at catchers who become managers, they have to deal with pitchers so much that they have a good feeling because the game is unfolding in front of them. I don't think it's a coincidence that catchers make the best managers, and consequently, there's more catchers managers than anything else and has been for a long time. But with the game unfolding right in front of them, with them having responsibility of getting that pitcher who's ever in there at any given time to get the most out of his ability, I think that's why they make the best managers. And I personally believe that, yes, you make a mistake in life, you pay for your mistake, and then you move on. You learn from it. If you're really smart, you never repeat it again, and you go from there. I don't, you know, we have a certain extent of cancel culture out there that says if you make one mistake, you should be buried for the rest of your life. I don't agree with that at all. And so, you know, there's a lot of people who will disagree with me. It really doesn't matter that much personally to me. But I believe that you should be able to pay the price for your mistake and then move on and continue your career. And I think both of these guys, I don't think you can go wrong with either of them. I prefer A.J. because I prefer catchers over infielders personally. I prefer him because he explained to me how he improved, why he improved, what he did to improve. And I thought he was a wonderful manager with Houston.
Briefly on a couple of fronts here, do you think Don Cooper survives this?
Well, I think he stays with the organization.
But maybe in a different role? Perhaps in an emeritus role?
Yes, I think he's probably going to be an advisor, I think. I don't know. I mean, a lot has to do with, you know, you don't choose your staff before you bring in a manager normally. You bring in your manager and then you allow him to have a great deal of input as opposed to, with the staff you're dealing with. So I think whoever they pick for a manager, he's going to have a great deal of input in his staff. And I think one thing that's really important, and maybe it was lost a little bit in the last twosome of Ricky and Don, you have to have supreme communication between your pitching coach and your manager. I mean, I don't say let them take it over. There was an interesting dynamic with Dave Duncan and Tony La Russa. Tony La Russa knew exactly what he knew about the game of baseball, but Tony La Russa also knew what he didn't know about the game of baseball, and that was basically the intricacies of a pitching staff, and he leaned heavily on Dave Duncan. He allowed Duncan the autonomy to help him run this pitching staff, and Duncan was magnificent, and when there comes a time for pitching coaches to be in the Hall of Fame, Dave Duncan will be there at the top of the list. But that duo, that dynamic that they had was, if not the best ever, it was one that you strive for. Having a certain amount of autonomy for your pitching coach, having your manager listen to your pitching coach, and have your pitching coach understand what your manager doesn't understand. And that way they work as a team and they work very well.
Stoney, lastly, we got the news that Joe Morgan passed away today at age 77, one of a player concurrent with your career and a broadcaster concurrent with your broadcasting career as well. Your thoughts on his passing?
Well, first of all, Joe was a magnificent player. I mean, playing against him was really tough because he did everything right. And plus, he stole a base when it really hurt you. He got the big hits when it really hurt you. He was not a big man, yet he had enough power to hit a home run. Again, normally when it really hurts you. So as a competitor, he was just outstanding, rightfully deserved his place in the Hall of Fame. The sad part about this, Dan, is that we're losing a lot of baseball greats here in a very short period of time. Makes me take a look at some of my some of my preparation and say, you know what, maybe I better take a deeper look into this kind of stuff. But it seems like it does happen in bunches, and unfortunately for baseball, we've lost some of the greats, and we are losing them in a very short period of time, like in the last month and a half. We're losing a lot of the living Hall of Famers. Their time is up, and unfortunately, it's happened to the game. I think it's happened across society. Obviously, we know the problems that we have, but baseball has been particularly hard hit. I am sorry for the passing of Joe Morgan. He truly was, and having been a competitor against him, he was a wonderful player.
Stoney, drive safe, man. Thank you.
Okay, Dan, take care, and we'll see. This is going to be an interesting time for the White Sox, and understand something. This is going to be a team that's made ready to win a World Series. They better have a manager who is good enough to do that.
Steve Stone, thank you, as always. That is the Scores White Sox and baseball expert and also the television voice, the analyst for White Sox baseball on NBC Sports Chicago. If you're just joining us, Ricky Renteria fired by the Chicago White Sox. The search for a manager begins, and all those other positions on the coaching staff remain in abeyance depending upon who they hire. And we are on the fly grabbing thoughts from people who matter, and we want reaction from you as well. Rick Hahn is going to begin speaking shortly, and we will let you know what he has to say as they prepared for it. It's funny that when we were planning the show, we were expecting at 11:45 to be saying, well, we'll find out what Rick Hahn might say about Rick Renteria. Little did we know that they were going to be letting him go before he even met the media. 312-644-6767. What do you think? You have the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.